The Guardian.
Blue Square Bet has a soft spot for all you Football Weekly fans. That's why, for a limited period only, if you join bluesquare.com and bet £25, we'll give you another £25 bet for free. Just text Guardian to 64555, that's 64555, and get your Football Weekly fans offer now. Enough said. Just bet with bluesquare.com.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, Premier League, a belated gasp at Everton's defeat of Man United. Plus, we ask what caused the Royals to get beat by Chelsea. Was it when she saw his Vegas photos? We look ahead to the weekend's matches. There's Liverpool Man City. There's Norwich QPR. And we get more of the skinny on the European scene too as we preview the opening round in Serie A. There's Conte's 10-month ban, Pazzini, Cassano, and so much more to talk about in today's Football Weekly Extra. Sir, yes, sir. Reporting for duty for today's Football Weekly Extra, we have Jacob Steinberg.
Hello, Jimbo.
Hey. Michael Cox.
Hello, James.
And continuing the youthful jauntiness, Ian McCall.
Hi, James.
That's you, isn't it? Youthful and jaunty, but not as youthful as some might think, because you're actually 30. Yes, world. It's true. Don't be fooled by the haircut.
My cover's been blown.
Yeah, absolutely. And, right, well, so much to talk about. You know, we're here at the start of the season, and the games are coming thick and fast. Just last night, Chelsea Reading.
I think I might have been the only one in the pod who saw it last night.
I don't know, because Jacob thinks he saw it too.
I saw the highlights.
Ah.
Yeah.
What did he see? Now, Jacob here has seen the highlights and he's read the scoreline and he's thinking, first he thought, ooh, Reading got the pace that we all thought they would. But then he thought, actually, Chelsea really dodged a bullet there because there was that dodgy offside goal and if it wasn't for Federici, etc., and all that. So in actual fact, Chelsea are looking a little bit less shaky, a little bit more shaky than we thought. What did the other kind of 87 minutes of the game tell you that he needs to know?
Well, the start told me that Chelsea can play this sort of expansive football that Roman Abramovich wants from them. They started off really well the first 25 minutes. They were superb and really bossed Reading around, and Lampard got that penalty from Hazard. Then after that, they sort of sat back on their laurels a bit, and Reading really came into it. And for the next 40 minutes or so, Reading were much the better side.
Yeah, they had the chance to go. They equalised. They went ahead, didn't they?
Yeah, I got a text off a mate who was at the game saying Cahill and Louise, which was a pointed remark at John Terry, who looked a bit dodgy, I think, last night. So I think a few Chelsea fans are starting to think that the future is Gary Cahill and David Luiz,
right,
in defence.
Luiz wasn't available for the game.
No,
last
he
night.
Was. What, he was injured. He was injured last night, but he should be back for the game against Newcastle on Saturday.
Right. So Reading then took the lead away to Stamford Bridge, where they haven't won since 1930 or something crazy like that. But then what happened?
And then what happened was that Torres got this quite contentious goal.
All right.
He was at least a foot or two offside, and the linesman ignored it and let it go.
Right.
And then after that, it was over, really.
Right. Well, because then they got the 4-2 because Reading had stuck Federici up at the other end to see if he could do something useful at that end.
Yeah.
If he's good at scoring goals in his own net, what could he do at the right one?
It was good that Chelsea actually went for it when the goalkeeper came up, because that doesn't usually happen, does it? Usually the goalkeeper comes up, the ball ends up with the opposition goalkeeper in his own goal, and he doesn't want to embarrass his opposite number.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I find. Because whenever a goalkeeper comes up, you think, oh, great, either he's going to score or he's going to concede. But it's quite rare that he concedes. So I quite like that.
All right, then. Good. Well, anyway, so there you go. That was Chelsea and that was Reading. Next up, Reading this weekend go to Sunderland. You imagine the Royals will have something of a point to prove after feeling they should have come away with at least a point at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, Chelsea away is the kind of game for a newly promoted side. It's a bit of a free game. If you pick anything up, it's a bit of a bonus. Whereas Sunderland at home is probably the kind of game they need to pick up points from.
Mm-hmm. All right. What about Chelsea and their next game, which pits them against Newcastle in a replay of the fixture which saw the goal of last season in the Premier League? You remember that extraordinary... Mm-hmm. Extraordinary, you know,
banana strike.
Thank you.
Yeah,
from Cissé.
Yeah. Well, that if we see anything as good as that on Saturday, then we'll be
happy, yeah. Won't we? No, Alan Pardew, of course. After his wonder strike against the official, What do you think? This is a big game, isn't it? For a Chelsea side that still, for all the goals they've scored, six and counting, is still finding its feet. Is that right, Ian? This big change in the style from last year's kind of dogged, determined, and a little bit predictable Drogba-led...
I think they're still finding their feet at the back a bit. They were all over the place last night, especially Terry. And he got dragged really badly out of position for Pogrebniak's goal. And then Cech obviously had a shocker. I think Newcastle are going to do a number on them with Ba and Cissé.
Mm. You were making the point about Ashley Cole, how many crosses he was allowing at the weekend.
Against Wigan. It was the most crosses that any... Well, not just Ashley Cole, because it came from both sides.
Oh, OK.
Wigan put in the most amount of crosses over the weekend.
Right.
Thank you, Opta. And, the thing about Newcastle, I find, is that they don't seem to be playing that well, but then they'll take one chance, and they've just with those two up front, they're really, really clinical. I think when they played against Spurs, I wasn't so impressed, but then out of nowhere, they suddenly were 1-0 up. From a superb goal from Demba Ba. Sometimes they can be a little bit lacking in fluidity. But just with those two up front, you know that you just have to be on your game all the time, and Chelsea at the back.
Yeah, I think a lot for that match as well might depend on if Tiote is fit or not.
All right.
Because I think he's got an ankle injury, maybe a hamstring injury at the moment. And if he can kind of prowl that area in front of the defence and stop, close down Hazard and Mata and players like that, then... He'll give Newcastle a fairly solid base to attack from.
Right, that was very much going to be my question, actually, because Chelsea have ruled the fancy dannery of Eden Hazard. There are those question marks, particularly in midfield, with Frank Lampard. Big Bananovic says Frank Lampard looks more and more off the pace in every game I see. I think he's done. I expect Mark Hughes is preparing a bid. People equally not that impressed with Mikel in there. So that's one area where Newcastle, with that terrific midfield lineup, if they're all fit, could really dominate.
Yeah, possibly. I'm not quite sure what Lampard's role in this team is. It was very obvious what his role was under Mourinho, that kind of era. And last season, I was very impressed with him. When Chelsea were playing counter-attacking in Europe, he sat quite deep, and he was the one playing the first pass to Ramirez or someone on the break. Whereas this team, it's difficult to see what he's there to do. But if Tiote is out, Newcastle have got Anita, who they've just signed from Ajax, who I think is a really good signing. He's very versatile, very combative. But good on the ball as well. So I'd be quite excited to see where he plays, actually, because he can play fullback or wide midfield or centre midfield.
Right.
What you don't know who he is, do you?
No, I was just thinking about all the possibilities. Anita presence in midfield, Anita style. Who is he? He's from Ajax.
Yeah. From Ajax.
Yeah. Yeah.
Combative midfielder, apparently.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Ajax have signed Christian Poulsen as his replacement, who's the player just least suited to Ajax's playing system.
Christian, not out of six Poulsen. When Denmark played against Portugal in a World Cup qualifier, he was so bad, gave away, basically just passed the ball to Nani for a goal, and he was given 0 out of 6 in the papers the next day.
For all his 0 out of 6-ness, Poulsen has played in a lot of top leagues, Michael.
He has. I think he was the first player to play in all 5 major leagues. Actually, I think Florin Radicchio did it.
Oh, yeah.
But Poulsen's played in all 5, so England, Spain, Italy, France, Germany. Now he's gone to Holland.
That's 6, isn't it?
Presumably he played in Denmark at the start of his career.
Can't rule it out.
So that's 7 he's played in, which is quite impressive.
That's crazy. And, of course, a move to Turkey on the card sooner or later.
You'd think so, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Good. Now, moving on, getting quite excited there about Chelsea-Newcastle. But the big game that happened post-pod on Monday was, Everton-Man United. An actual good start for Everton. Why?
They have a settled team for once. I think usually when they come into the season, they've got a lot of injuries, or they haven't, or they've lost. Well, they've lost Jack Rodwell, but they haven't lost anybody else. And I don't think Rodwell was such a big player for them last season. Usually they come into this with sometimes a scratch side, and they haven't made the signings. They usually make their signings on the last day of the transfer window. This time they're getting in players when they need them.
Well, why is that? Has there been an injection of cash, or have the banks loosened things up for them? Or
possibly. I mean, but I have no expertise on Everton's finances. But Obviously, the fact that they've got $15 million for Rodwell means that they can spend a bit more money.
But they didn't actually have any new signings in the team, did they? Apart from Pienaar, who's obviously been there before.
Did Naismith not make the?
He came on as a sub.
Okay.
Yeah. So I take the point. I think they've done really well in the transfer window, but I think that was just pretty much last year's team.
Right, and but just not losing any of last year's team is a major step forward.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. And I think Moyes played it brilliantly. You know, Carrick was at centre-back and Valencia at right-back. That was a huge problem. And they just stuck Fellaini up there, and it was a fairly simple approach, but worked pretty well.
So the Man United back four was Valencia at right-back, and then Carrick in the middle.
Yep.
And then you had Vidic, who was pretty much the only defender, given that Evra was at left-back. So how did Man United get into this position where they don't have any defenders?
Well, they're all injured, and Raphael was on the bench, presumably after his shocking performance for Brazil in the final of the Olympics. But it was quite odd that I thought that he probably should have come on, maybe at half-time, given the way that Fellaini just sort of realised, I won't go to the left side of the fence, I'll go where Carrick is and where Valencia is, and I'll just bully them. But this is what we've seen from Everton a lot against United. You know, last season they absolutely battered them in that 4-4 draw late on. They couldn't handle Fellaini at all. And, you know, 2 years ago, if you go back to that 3-3 draw that Everton had as well, again, they couldn't handle him. You thought it would have changed with Vidic back. He was the key man when they won their last year, United 1-0 in October. He was he dealt with Fellaini really well, but obviously he's coming back from a cruciate injury, which he'll probably take a bit of time to get into his stride. They desperately need their centre-backs back.
Mm. All right, well, how worried should they be? That's their first opening day defeat since 2004. United, they're at home to Fulham at the weekend. Jaunty.
Well, I don't think they should be that worried about it. It's only one game. Mm-hmm. What I would be really worried about if I were a United fan is the fact that their midfield got bullied around so easily by Fellaini.
Right.
It was Scholes and Cleverley in the midfield, and neither of them are really going to stop somebody like Fellaini.
Right. Do Fulham have a Fellaini?
No. Well, they've got a bit of Mamadou Diarra, but not quite the same. But Fellaini, though, was someone who, for a long time, I wasn't that taken with. You know, and then I think over the last year or so, more since he's been moved forward, I think when he plays, because of his size, people think that he should be playing, you know, defence midfield. I don't think he's that good there. When he moves forward, though, superb.
Mm.
And if you look at City with Yaya Toure, that is the problem that United have when they play against Manchester City now. You know, to see that Ferguson is scared of them, why they were so, you know, terrified in that that game at the end of the season. And Fellaini would be a great signing for United. I think that's the kind of player they need to make them more combative in midfield.
Oh, all right. The Forkiers actually wants to know, what is his best position, Michael?
Well, I pretty much agree with Jacob there, but I think he's one of those players, he can play pretty much anywhere in midfield quite well. The thing I like about him...
He's handy up front as well. He's been used as
a job there.
Target man up front.
Yeah. The thing I like about him is he does just win every midfield header, and I think that winning aerial balls in midfield is quite underrated. Like, you don't notice it because it's not in a goal-scoring position.
Right.
But I remember when Arsenal, a few years ago, went from Vieira and Gilberto, who won everything, to Fabregas and Flamini and won nothing.
Right.
And the amount of lost balls in midfield, I think, contributed to them not retaining or not getting the ball to retain possession.
Right, the big man in midfield. I'm liking this.
And he's got good feet for a big man.
That's excellent. Yeah. Did you know that on the subject of surprising Fellaini facts, he's only 24?
Yeah.
And speaking of big men in midfield, did you notice that they spelled Anderson's name wrong?
Yes. Jersey. Yep.
United have a history of this. They've spelt Beckham's name wrong and Kusicek's name wrong and O'Shea's as well, I think.
Yeah.
And on the same weekend, McLean had his name spelt wrong as well on a Sunderland jersey.
God, where will it end?
Do you know who had an absolute stinker on Monday night? It was Wayne Rooney.
Right.
So bad. So off the pace. And
he looks really unfit, doesn't he?
He looks so unfit. I don't know what he's been doing this summer. But Shinji Kagawa is probably United's best player by some distance. But Rooney just gave him nothing to work with at all. And I think Van Persie is someone who's going to make more of the runs. You know, for about 3 years, United haven't been able to drop Rooney. You have someone like Kagawa and Van Persie. You can't necessarily say that Rooney has any hold over Van Persie. You know, you can't say that he's necessarily better than him. And he is now someone who can actually, you know, make him work for his place. And he was so bad.
Mm. Interesting. So Van Persie with Kagawa in support, you think?
Possibly.
Mm. Interesting.
You do wonder about Rooney because he's now been playing Premier League football for 10 seasons, which is quite incredible. And that's a lot of games. And
we on to the Rooney's already knackered because he's been playing for such
No, I'm certainly not going to write him off, but he's been playing Premier League football for 10 seasons. And, you know, veterans who go on and on, someone like Giggs and Scholes, are quite professional. They keep themselves very, very fit.
I would think that Rooney's been following a lot of the exercise routines that Ryan Giggs has done.
Yeah, quite possibly. Quite possibly. But a lot of Manchester United fans didn't think he was particularly good last season, despite the fact he scored a lot of goals. Mm. And I think he's still going to be a first choice in the system and will be for probably many years to come.
But he scored 27 goals last year, filled in the midfield when he had to. I think he even had a stint at fullback, didn't he, at one point, Chrisley?
He did, yeah.
So how did he not have a good season?
Because I think, to a certain extent, his goal scoring covered up the fact that he wasn't playing particularly well overall.
He's saying that goals were overrated.
To a certain extent. I mean, it's interesting that Ferguson's brought in Kagawa to play essentially in the role Rooney was playing last season.
Right.
I think they're going to play with Kagawa and then three forwards, so possibly Welbeck.
Welbeck was he was wasted out wide, though, wasn't he? He doesn't play well there.
I don't think so. I think he got into two very good positions and should have scored. I mean, his runs were excellent. He got into 2 1-on-1s.
Right,
and
then, when he has the ball and he has to take someone on from there, he didn't look confident.
Yeah,
for me.
That's a legitimate argument, I think. But he's very good at timing his runs, yeah.
All right, then. Just one final question before we introduce the musical sting and move on to part two. Clint Dempsey, what's happening with him? Is he gonna be there for Fulham this weekend?
Probably not.
No. What's happening with Clint?
I don't know.
He was the most loyal soldier.
Yeah, but, you know, when Liverpool come calling,
yeah,
the chance to be
but, you know,
eighth from ninth.
Don't say I'm not going to play. Do you think that's what actually happened, or is he not given his side of the story yet?
I imagine that his side of the story will be that Martignol punched him or something.
Really?
Yeah.
Punched Deuce?
Yeah. For rapping.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to know what the true story is there, because I can't
believe
it.
Maybe he can release a rap about it.
Well, yeah, maybe. Yeah. But I'm sure indeed Fulham fans would like to know what's going on, although they did look great without him. Anyway, you're not big on Fulham's chances this weekend at Old Trafford because they're rubbish away traditionally. Is that right?
You never know without a defence.
I think there'll be goals.
I have a funny feeling Fulham could pull something here. There's a funny feeling, though. Anyway, let's move on to part two after this. Everton are at Aston Villa this weekend. It's a big game for Villa and for Everton.
Yeah, Everton have a pretty good record there at Park. Yeah, I saw Villa on the weekend, last weekend at Upton Park, and was saying on Monday that they were very lightweight.
Right. Love the chant from the fans, "We're passing the ball, we're passing the ball."
Yeah, without going anywhere, though. So, you know, it only means so much.
Right. OK, well, baby steps. And that now... Hey, this is an exciting one. The derby of the teams that were both beaten 5-0 last weekend, Norwich against QPR. One of them's reacted by making a lot of signings.
Yeah, I just got this image of Mark Hughes just with a blindfold on throwing darts at a wall with players who were good in 2008.
Yeah. All right, some of those players, not been confirmed yet, has it? Carvalho. That has been confirmed now, has it?
No.
Not yet,
no.
But it looks like he's coming from Real Madrid. Dawson from Spurs.
That sounds like it might be off.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
This morning.
Jermaine Defoe, also from Spurs.
Yeah, it seems like whenever these clubs like QPR, Sunderland, Portsmouth in the past get a bit of money, the default response is to go and buy players who Spurs don't want anymore.
Right. Yeah. In Jermaine Defoe's case, it might not be a bad policy. Why is it? Why is it that Spurs would countenance losing him when they're not overly blessed with other attacking talents, and he's the man who always seems to come through for them?
Well, they want to sign Damiao, don't they? Yeah. They bought Adebayor this week.
Well, they've arranged for City to pay his wages and park him at White Hart Lane.
Yep.
Pretty much, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've kind of signed him.
Yeah, okay. But still, it's a long season. You know, you want... I'm just surprised
Defoe gets you 15 goals a season.
Yeah.
And he's kind of happy to be on the bench.
All right, what about QPR and their policy? Great article by Jamie Jackson in The Guardian today. Top publication available at your local newsagent. Sorry, because I know that we're not allowed to do kind of in-pod promotions and that. But anyway, in it, he details the extraordinary level of player turnover since Tony Fernandes took over at the club. 40 players and counting. And you have to wonder, this is a club that could be facing relegation at the end of the season. Is it sustainable, Jacob?
Well, according to the Swiss Ramble blog, their wage turnover is 183%.
Hang on a sec. You're saying that their wages, that they the amount they pay on wages is 183% of what they actually have in turnover?
Yeah, I'm not very good with numbers, but I don't think that's good.
It's not good, is it? But on the other hand, the amount of money that you get for staying in the Premier League is such a huge sum compared to what happens if you drop out that a lot of people say it's worth spending the extra money just to, you know...
Probably not to that extent, though.
Right.
This season is quite important, too, because there's a new TV deal next year, which is going to be even bigger than the current one.
So right.
It's you know, it's vital that those clubs like QPR stay up.
Right, OK. Interesting. And with the side they're assembling, they look like they should do, no?
It's kind of a good collection of players, but not a team.
Well, after the January transfer window, actually, they had assembled a very good side. And when Cisse wasn't getting sent off, they were picking up some really good results. And, you know, if you just base the season upon the second half of last season when they had a good team...
They almost won at Man City.
Yeah, they were a very good team. And I kind of think they're signing too many players. I think there's some quite underrated players in that side. People like Anuaha. Jamie Mackie did really well second half of last season. And when it comes to Defoe, I quite like Defoe, but I'm not sure you want Defoe and Cisse up front.
Right.
Gary Neville had a very good line on Monday night. He said, I'm surprised they didn't flush the toilet, you know.
Yeah.
Talking about some of the players he thinks they should have got rid of during the summer.
Absolutely. All right, so what about QPR this weekend at Norwich?
It was put to me as a very ghoulish fixture because of the 5-0s last weekend. Norwich badly needed a win, I think, because he's a new manager. If they lose the second game, particularly against a side who aren't very good away from home, I like Houghton, but that would just be really such a big blow for them after losing Lambert.
All right. Well, what about the team who put 5 past QPR last weekend, Swansea, who are going to be hosting your West Ham, Jacob? That must be a worrying prospect.
Yeah, but I think that he's going to kind of relish taking on these sides.
Really?
Yeah.
Big Sam?
Yeah. Big Sam with his big team.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Anybody got any thoughts on West Ham, Swansea?
Just to say that along with Stoke against Arsenal is two great clashes in style. Long ball football against passing football.
What about Arsenal? Should we regard the first game post-Van Persie as being evidence of their attacking aridity? Or was it just one failed... Giroud shot away from being an entirely different narrative?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think Giroud will be the main striker. Podolski started as the central striker and he won't do that much in future. I think Arsenal's problem in that game was that Jovinho, Walcott and Podolski all quite small, quite quick. And Sunderland could just defend really deep and there was no one to kind of hold the ball up. But I think Giroud will be a good signing. And I think despite losing Van Persie and Song, if Arsenal... bring in Sahin to go along with Cazorla, Podolski and Giroud, I think they've got a significantly better team than last year.
We go across now to our transfer rumour desk, Jaunty and McCord. What's the latest on the Yuri Sahin story?
I think he's on his way, isn't he? I mean, Jose Mourinho said he
But not to Arsenal, is it?
Well, Jose Mourinho said he couldn't care where he goes.
Oh,
so
that's not like Jose. Arm around the shoulders, Jose. But is it not that he's heading to Anfield? Or have I been reading fake tweets again?
You might have been. It's one or the other.
Okay, thanks for that.
Linked with Jesus Navas as well.
Yeah.
I can't see that.
That's definitely...
So what is in the rumour mill this morning then?
David Luiz to Chelsea was the main one.
To Chelsea?
That's confirmed.
David Luiz to Man City was the main one.
Really?
Yeah, it's not going to happen, though. Just the way Jesus Navas is... there's not a hope in hell that he's going to go to Arsenal. He suffers from chronic homesickness.
Yes.
So Arsenal is way too far for him to go.
Yeah.
Next Reyes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just astonished by that David Luiz. On what basis? What?
Well, Micah Richards is out for a while, so they need another comedy defender to replace him.
Right. Okay, yeah, put like that. I can see where you're coming from. Anyway, so Sahin, you were saying, et cetera. I'm not sure if he's going to be there at Arsenal.
No, but I think he will be.
Okay.
And it seems fairly certain that he will. And I think Arsenal have got a really good team this year. I think they've got variety in attack. I think they might lack a little bit of... midfield presence, but I think it's debatable how much Song was providing that last year.
I'm sure they're going to have lots of presence since they've got a player called Santi in there.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Sorry, and you're going to make something
No, I was just wondering how Michael thinks Podolski will do.
I'm not a huge fan of him individually, to be honest, but I think that he can be effective if he's not the main man, if that makes sense. Like Germany 2010, I thought he did really well because you had Müller and Özil playing well, closer getting the goals, and Podolski was kind of just providing directness on the left. So I think if he does that for Arsenal, he'll be good. if he's the central striker as he was on Saturday, I don't really fancy him there.
Yeah, he had a poor Euros, didn't he?
He did. He wasn't that impressive. He got replaced in the team, didn't he, by the end? Yeah.
All right. Well, also on the Premier League fixture list this weekend, you got your Southampton Wigan. Six-pointer, really, isn't it?
Already?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it doesn't matter when it is in the season. When two teams are going to be there in the relegation mix, you know. Swansea taking West Ham, mentioned that. Sunderland, Reading kind of mentioned that as well. Do you know Sunderland haven't won a game in 10 now in the Premier League? So
yeah, they ended last season awfully. Mm. Yeah.
They're signing Stephen Fletcher. Wolves are picking up £24 million for Stephen Fletcher.
How are they getting 24? And Matt Jarvis.
He's going to West Ham. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy when you look at, you know, Michu going for £2 million. This has to stop.
Yeah, I can't imagine why. There must be somebody who's just collecting a massive percentage on that.
Yeah. The other one I saw was Valencia player Pablo Hernandez, who I really like, is available for £5 million, going to Swansea possibly.
All right.
And just, you get all these English managers spending loads of money on kind of average players.
Yeah. Anyway, Spurs West Brom. That's an interesting game, isn't it? AVB against WBA. That's how I like to think of it.
Yeah, and two former Jose Mourinho proteges.
Hey, again?
Yeah, there's three of them, isn't there? Rodgers, Clark and Villas-Boas.
Right, OK, there you go. That's true. Yep. He needs a result, doesn't he, Villas-Boas? Because, you know, the agenda's already set against him.
Yeah, I mean, I think they need to complete their side. They've got Adebayor in, but they're still looking to make moves in the transfer market. The Modric saga is, I think, really causing them problems in central midfield as well.
At the back, this business of Dawson going to QPR, and they've also let Sebastian Bessong go, is that right as well?
Yeah, but they've got four quite good centre-backs.
Who are they?
Vertonghen.
Right, he's just come in.
Yeah, I think he's a very good player.
Right, but he's just come in.
Yeah.
Ledley King's gone.
Yeah, but they've got Cabal, who had a very good season last time.
Right.
And then they've got Corker, who was excellent at Swansea last year, and then Gallas, who kind of just does a job.
Yeah. Right.
So they've got four good players, and I don't think Dawson was suited to playing high up the pitch.
Still, interesting. But Andre Villas-Boas being already talked up as somebody who's confusing the dressing room. First he makes Dawson skipper, and then he sends him off down to Loftus Road.
Yeah, you've got to question that decision. I think, you know, getting rid of Dawson wouldn't be a terrible move, but making him captain,
right,
especially in the absence of Ledley King, who's been such a kind of strong captain even when he hasn't been playing,
right,
and then to sell him straight away is a little bit weird.
Possibly he's just been observing the way Arsenal worked and thought it was an English tradition.
Possibly. They'll be finishing third or fourth then next season.
Ooh-hoo. Perhaps so. Well, they finished fourth this season, of course. Anyway, that's a big game, isn't it? West Brom at Spurs. Yes, it is. Thanks for that confirmation. Shall we finish off with perhaps the biggest game of the weekend? Liverpool-Man City. Liverpool beaten 3-0 by West Brom just last weekend at home to Man City. Is it going to be a different story at Anfield, Ian?
No.
Do you not think?
No.
You don't think they're back within the safe walls of... No?
No. I mean, Liverpool had a really poor home record last season. I think they only won about...
Against the small clubs?
I think in general, they only won about six games at home last season.
Yeah.
I think. And I think Man City will have far too much firepower. Also, Liverpool don't score enough goals.
Liverpool going to be without Aga. Man City going to be without Aguero.
But, yeah, City can still bring in Balotelli.
Right.
Which will more than make up for
it's not quite fit yet, Balotelli. So it's put, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Toure push forward a little bit. You know, sometimes what he does against those bigger teams in the away games. They haven't got a very good record at Anfield, though. And they've been, last season they drew, but they probably should have lost. And they also drew in the Carling Cup, which meant they went out in the semi-final. The year before, they lost 3-0, and they let Carroll score twice.
Right.
Against them.
That's unlikely to happen this weekend, I'm thinking, because would he get a sniff of the pitch, do you think, Andy Carroll?
I don't know if he's grazing or something before the kickoff. But
yeah, but he doesn't seem to feature at all in Brendan Rodgers' plans.
Well, no, I think the way that England played, when he played against Italy last week, and they wanted to play 4-2-3-1, and they were quite good in midfield with Cleverley and so on, but when it went to him up front, it's just he was so off the pace for the rest of the side.
Well, Newcastle coming in trying to get him on loan this weekend, but getting short shrift from Brendan Rodgers. Michael?
The interesting thing about Liverpool against Manchester City last year was that Lucas Leiva completely dominated Yaya Toure, despite being about half his size. He had an absolutely magnificent game. And it'd be interesting to see whether he can do that again. Obviously, he's just back from injury. And he's such a key player for Liverpool. I mean, in players' absence through injury, their ability can be overstated, but I thought Lucas was fantastic for the first 3 or 4 months of last season, so interesting to see where he's at in terms of his fitness and level of performance.
Do you see this game as being as straightforward as Ian's suggesting for Man City?
I think it'd be more difficult, but I think City are strong favourites. It'd be interesting to see who Rodgers replaces Agger with, whether it's Coates or Carragher, because you'd think Carragher just doesn't suit the system really.
Right. And what does Coates suit?
He's quicker. I think he's better on the ball. He's obviously inexperienced, maybe a little bit lightweight. But I think that decision will kind of say a lot about what Rodgers wants to do at Liverpool.
Right. Yeah. Liverpool, it should be mentioned, are playing in that Europa League business, aren't they? This evening, they're up against Hearts.
Battle of Britain,
Ian. Correct. So they might be tired.
Well, he's going to play a reserve side tonight, isn't he?
So Andy Carroll.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
All right, then. Cool. Now, there you go. Little bit of championship, Jacob. They've been busy, haven't they? There's been some midweek action there.
Yeah, midweek.
Gianfranco Zola.
Yeah, I was at Watford on Tuesday.
He's the big man at Watford now.
Yeah, and they lost 1-0, and they were absolutely dreadful against Ipswich.
Were they?
A last-minute winner from Michael Chopra, his first goal for ages.
Right.
They've got Almunia in goal. And
who have? Watford?
Yeah.
Oh.
And he had a couple of his specials and nearly threw one in. And Gianfranco Zola's got... He comes into the press conference afterwards and he's still smiling and everybody's heart melts. And then you listen to what he's saying and you kind of analyse it. And he wants to play this really great football. Doesn't seem to have any idea how to actually do it, though. And I'd be really worried if I was a Watford fan. For the fact that they've got the two guys who were with him at West Ham, Gianluca Nanni and Scott Duxbury, who were both very quickly shown the door when Golden Sullivan took over. And they've brought in 6 loan players, I think, in the summer. I don't think the loan players are the way to go. You can't build a team around loan players, especially when they've come from Udinese and Granada. I think they're all kind of talented guys, but to play in the Championship, you know, that kind of pace, that kind of intensity and how many games there are, it takes a lot of time for them to bed in.
This is because Watford are now part of the whole Udinese kind of multinational consortium thing.
Well, they came straight in, Gianpaolo Pozzo, and he sacked Sean Dyche straight away, who it was his first season last year, and Watford had lost Danny Graham, who went to Swansea, he'd scored 25 goals or something for Watford the previous season. And he managed to get them to 11th place, which is, for Watford, you know, is a really, really good position. And they ended the season really well. And he came straight in and he sacked him and brought in Zola, who has no experience of this level. He got sacked by West Ham. He was, you know, again, he had this grand ambitions to play great football and they couldn't do it. I don't think that he's a manager. He's a nice guy. The players will love him. But, you know, whether he's actually able to, whether the fans will love him will be something else.
All right. It's a remarkable hair transplant he's put together.
I know.
Really,
he had no
really
hair
impressive.
At West Ham. And now he's suddenly grown it again.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Michael?
So,
it's interesting that they, Watford, are kind of third in line in that kind of feeder club thing with Udinese and Granada. I'm not sure I've seen that before. But in fairness, Udinese, I think, in terms of player recruitment, are probably up there with the most well-run clubs in Europe. And Granada, who got promoted last year, and I think most people expected them to struggle, they survived, not comfortably, but it wasn't kind of a last day of the season thing. So, you know, they obviously do have some know-how and they do have experience of bringing in players.
But their guy that they apparently want to bring in players is Nanni, who at West Ham brought in Ilunga, Di Michele, Diego Tristan, Savio and Zareco. No one even knows where he is anymore. And a host of other players who... Yeah, and he sold people like Zamora, Etherington, and brought in people like Kovac. So, you know, this guy... I don't trust him at all.
Right. Alan Kerbishi...
he left, yeah.
Yeah, he has some interesting stories to tell about.
Yeah, which maybe we won't go into.
Right, OK. Blackburn Rovers, they're up to 4th in the Championship.
I know, Keane in. They had Kazim Richards.
Keane in, but nobody else was. They had their lowest attendance since attendances began, I think.
And no one should read this as Venky's know what they're doing, though.
But...
No.
Oh, they shouldn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Right. That's it for part two. Then up next, posts and a bit of Italy. One or two posts. Graham McNeil says, "Welcome back, gentlemen. I hate my first post to be a complaint, but how could you possibly fail to mention Saturday's Rangers game, deemed worthy of a piece in the New York Times, no less? Almost 50,000 fans at a fourth-tier match is extraordinary. The whole Rangers saga is surely one of the biggest stories in Europe, etc., etc., etc. Well, it is a big story, isn't it? There were more fans at that game, says producer Ben, than in the entire attendance of the SPL, you know, put together and all that. It's a bit like with Napoli, we're down in the third division, and the teams that were meant to be having home fixtures with them were asked to play their fixtures away so they could have the massive gate at the San Paolo and get the cut of that. Anyway, well, Sam Cooper, how well will English sides do in the Champions League this year? That's a bit of a tricky question to address this early in the season, isn't it?
Well, I like the fact that the Champions League draw is on the morning the transfer deadline day closes. Ooh. So I'm hoping that, you know, a couple of teams will get really difficult draws and then just go out and splash money straight away.
Nice one. Now, a couple of posts about Italy. Martin P.I. says, are Milan heading to mid-table obscurity? While Starock says, please explain the Pazzini-Cassano swap deal. Cassano is more talented. Milan have had to pay serious money to get the deal done. What's in it for them? Let's go across to our Bordeaux Euro football and press the flashing red button that says James Horncastle. James.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
I'm very good indeed. How are you?
Yes, ever so well. Now, what about the Pazzini-Cassano deal? Explain, James, explain.
Well, I'm not entirely surprised by a swap deal between Inter and Milan. I think, you know, this is the 23rd or so time that it's happened. And after seeing what Francesco Coco be swapped for Seedorf and Gulli for Pirlo, these things tend to...
Well, it's usually Inter that get the kind of the smelly end of the stick on these ones. But in this case, they get Cassano and Milan get a player who scored, Ian, how many goals?
5 goals in 33 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think a lot of people have come out of this thinking that Inter have got the better end of the deal. I mean, how often do you get someone that's undeniably talented as Cassano plus 7 million, and you know, they're taking a flop off your books at the same time for that. But on the other hand, I mean, for me, this is kind of typical Inter and typical Moratti not being really able to help himself, because you can question whether Inter really need a player like Cassano. I know it's going to be great fun. Yeah, he claims to have been a boyhood Inter fan. Yeah, the first sort of football school he went to was called Pro Inter Bari. He obviously scored. Announced himself to the world by scoring that fantastic goal against Inter when he was at Bari. But I think Inter have done a lot of good business this year, bringing in the likes of Handanovic, Silvestre, Guarin, Mudingai, Palacio, all kind of players who they need in those roles. And Cassano, you kind of wonder where he fits into all that. Whereas I think Pazzini, okay, He had a very, very difficult year last year, but Milan actually do need him. You know, they need a sort of physical number nine to replace Ibrahimovic. I mean, he's not a light replacement for Ibra, but in terms of just being tall, strong, capable of holding up the ball, you know, if you look at their other strikers, they're like short, technical second strikers like Rabinho and Steven Elshouari, or their explosive, quick strikers like your run at defences like Pato, who doesn't really get that many opportunities to run up defences because, as we saw yesterday, he's got injured again.
How many injuries is that now, Ian?
I believe it's 15 since January 2010.
Right. How many games has he played?
He's missed 67 because of those injuries.
Wow.
Yeah. He missed 34 last year alone.
Right.
They've just apparently agreed to loan Zé Eduardo from Genoa. I think it's more evidence of Milan doing. I think they've got 9 players on their books at the moment who have either played for Genoa or have at least been contracted to Genoa at some point. So they're kind of their, you know, Jim will fix it, if you like.
Yeah.
Hi, James. I was wondering, what you see a lot of players go between Inter and Milan. Why does that happen? You don't see it happen so often between, you know, well, you don't see it between Liverpool, Everton, City, United, so on. Why does this happen so often?
I think
creative accounting.
Yes, well, there is that. I think in the early days, it depended where Inter and Milan were in the table. If Inter weren't doing particularly well, then Milan were prepared to, you know, sort of give them a hand me down and vice versa. I mean, these are clubs of, you know, when one's typically at the top of the championship, the other's struggling. And there's kind of there's even with the Milan derby, there's always a kind of it's a friendly rivalry rather than a kind of a Lazio Roma rivalry. And as James referenced there, particularly in the early 2000s, a lot of it was to do with creative accounting. I mean, that's why you did just see ludicrous swaps like Francesco Coco for Seedorf and Gulli for Andrea Pirlo, which really backfired in his face. I mean, there were lots and lots of deals at that time, which, you know, they weren't, I would say, to improve the team, they weren't to improve the balance sheet.
What you'd do is you would enter the money earned from the sale in this year's accounts and put the money that you spend on the acquisition you get in the swap in next year's accounts. But both clubs would do the same thing. So they would basically both load the deal, the negative side of the deal on next year's accounts on the assumption that some, you know, fairy would come along and make all the bad things go away by the time 12 months have passed. Anyway, all very interesting, and plus Valencia led a lot of Italian clubs into all sorts of trouble. James, Martin P.I.'s question about Milan heading to mid-table obscurity, is that your feeling there?
Well, I mean, the losses they've had to absorb, I don't think any club could maintain a sort of consistent title challenge, which was what Milan were last year. They were the main rival to Juventus. I mean, they waved goodbye to Nesta, Seedorf, Gattuso, and Inzaghi, which was, you know, sort of, I think, in terms of having dressing room leaders, veterans, people who know the Milan way, is a big sort of intangible loss, because you could probably argue that only Nesta and Seedorf were still playing quite regularly for Milan at the time. But then to lose their two best players as well, Thiago Silva and Ibrahimovic, I think Milan have scaled back their ambition significantly. They're talking about being happy to just qualify for the Champions League next year, and in this year's Champions League, get out of the group stages and maybe get to the quarterfinals. That's the sort of height of their aspiration. But one thing I would say is that, you know, as with all Ibrahimovic teams, there's a tendency for them to become dependent on Ibrahimovic. I think Allegri has been very keen to sort of use this people writing Milan off to galvanise the team, to make them greater than the sum of their parts. There might actually be a better collective operation this year than last year. But having said that, I mean, a lot of their signings this year are either freebies or sort of low-cost operations, which haven't really inspired a great deal of confidence. I think the prospect of having a completely new centre-back partnership, which was Thiago Silva and Nesta last year, now being Mario Yepes and Christian Zapata or Philippe Mexès or Francesco Acerbi, is, you know, I think, yeah, frankly, a bit dubious.
A bit scary, yeah. All right, so they've had a dreadful pre-season, Milan, and one or two barbed comments from the senior management towards Allegri for that. Who do you see, then, being the favourites this year? Inter, Juventus, Roma, Napoli, perhaps?
I think it's Juventus' title to lose. I think they were already very strong last year, and they've strengthened with the right people. They brought in Mauricio Isla and Kwadwo Asamoah, who sort of fit Conte's philosophy and will help them rotate and cope with being engaged on three fronts. But let's say maybe leave Juventus aside and look at some of the other people. I mean, I think Napoli have got a well-established team and look best placed to challenge Juventus this year. I mean, they've lost Ezequiel Lavezzi, but they've got a sort of replacement for him in-house, who a lot of people are very excited about, called Lorenzo Insigne, who is Napoli-born and bred, so everyone's going wild for him. He spent the last couple of years on loan with Zenit Zeman at Foggia and Pescara. And speaking of Zeman, obviously he's returned to Roma, who promised to be the sort of best team to watch next year, of course, with Zeman's reputation for no compromises, all that. In fact, they've done some good business in the transfer market. They've got the striker everyone wanted in Italy, which is Mattia Destro, sort of Balotelli's contemporary in Inter's academy, if you like. They've brought in Michael Bradley from Chievo, Federico Balzaretti.
They kept De Rossi as well.
But I think everyone's talking about Fiorentina, not as a title rival, but certainly as a team that in recent memory, under Prandelli, had back-to-back fourth-place finishes, got into the Champions League for a couple of seasons. They've been the real talk of the transfer market. They've arguably got one of the best midfields in Italy. They brought in Borja Valero from Villarreal, who a lot of people are excited about. Alberto Aquilani, make of that what you like. But David Pizarro, who everyone kind of recognises as a great little playmaker. Matias Fernandes from Sporting Lisbon, great free kick taker and dribbler. I think a lot of people believe that Fiorentina could at least be fun to watch. Obviously, coached by Vincenzo Montella, who was a revelation last year at Catania. Not least in this sort of title debate, would probably be, I haven't even discussed Inter, but I'll tell you Udinese. I think.
No, stop that. That's crazy talk. Listen, Berbatov, is he going to Florence?
I don't have an official line on that, but the speculation is increasing. There's a piece in Gazzetta today which police have got the okay of the player, and that's something, a fee in the region of 7 million would be enough to persuade Ferguson to let him go. I think Berbatov has been linked with Fiorentina way, way in the past when he was a Bayer Leverkusen. I think there was a story of him and their old director of sport, Andrea Cordovino, entertaining him in Florence, showing him around and whatnot. So, I think it would be something appeal. I mean, one of the things that Montella said was like, look, we've got this great midfield. I personally, if I still played, I'd love to play for this Fiorentina. It'd be great fun. And they need someone exactly like Montella, someone who can score the goals, because aside from Jovetic, who's the second striker, they don't really have a goal scorer of 20, 25 goals a season. And if Berbatov can provide that, then I wouldn't say they'd challenge for a Champions League place, but certainly a Europa League place.
Right. De Rossi staying at Roma, obviously a massive boost for that club. Juventus, you said, we'll leave them aside for a moment. The Champions last year in fantastic form, unbeaten throughout the Serie A campaign. They will have the Champions League to deal with this year, and also the fact that their manager, Antonio Conte, subject to the next level of appeals, will be out of the picture for 10 months. What do you make, a little bit briefly, and I know it's a huge topic, but a little bit briefly, James, what do you make of Conte receiving a 10-month ban on the basis of Corobbio's testimony? Testimony that's already been half disproved in the latest round of court cases.
Yeah, because Conte was faced two accusations of failing to report match fixing. I think it's important to say that he's not actually accused of match fixing. But yesterday at the appeal, one of those instances he was absolved of it, and yet the ban was not reduced, which I think took a lot of people by surprise. I think the problem for Conte relates to this game between Siena and Albino Lecce towards the end of the 2010-11 season when he was in charge of Siena in Serie B. Basically, the first match between those two sides that season, Conte's assistant, Christian Stellini, approached two Siena players, Filippo Carobbio and Claudio Tertian, to see if they might make contact with their fellow professionals at Albino Lecce with a sort of view to arranging a result of the next match between them later in the season in favour of the team that needed the points. And even though Stellini claims he's acted alone, witness testimony claims that he explicitly told Carobbio and Terzi to keep this from Conte because otherwise he'd be very angry. And even though Stellini has since resigned from his post at Juventus to face other charges relating to his previous jobs at Siena and Bari, I mean, the prosecution finds it really hard to believe that Conte could not have known about this particular fix. And this is the problem that his defence had in sort of persuading the prosecution that he didn't know, is that they have to try and separate the roles between him and his assistant and how much he was in the dark. But, Juventus are giving their utmost support for Conte. I mean, Andrea Agnelli believes there's a witch hunt going on, but he's insists there's no plan B. Conte will not be replaced. In the interim, they have Massimo Carrera, one of Conte's staff, will be on the bench because obviously Conte's got a touchline ban. Now, how much does this impact on Juventus this season? Well, Conte is allowed to take training during the week. He's allowed to work with players. He's even allowed to sort of talk to the players before the match. He just can't directly participate in it when it's on. So the question is, well, where is the influence of the coach felt? Is it in training on during the week, or is it on a match day? Conte is meticulous. He prepares his players extremely well. I think Pirlo said, he's never had as meticulous a coach as Conte. But he also has a role on the sidelines. I think Conte's one of those players. He's not like one of those coaches. He's not like Avram Grant or Sven, who's passive. He's very demonstrative on the sidelines. He encourages players, issues orders, makes changes. I think his absence to some extent will be felt. But then again, Juventus have acted very quickly. I mean, Carrera has already been on the bench for 3 games, 2 friendlies, 1 competitive match. They won the Italian Super Cup. They came back from behind in that game, which I think it was a lot of people thought, well, how will Juventus react with Conte not being on the bench and them going behind? Well, they came back to win that game 4-2. So I think people still believe that with or without Conte, Juventus are still by far and away the strongest team in this league. And should win.
All right, James. Well, listen, thanks very much for that. They begin their campaign this weekend against Parma. That'll be an interesting match. Sampdoria, meantime, will be Milan's first opponent's game that I'll be bringing you on ESPN. If we can just throw that one in there. Very good. Right. James, thanks ever so much for joining us today. That brings us to the end of Football Week Extra. So it's goodbye and thank you as well to Ian McCourt, to Michael Cox and Jacob Steinberg, unless there was anything else you wanted to throw in at this juncture.
I had heard that Petkovic is having his players photographed naked.
Why did you not mention this before?
Well, I had it written down, but James Horncastle was talking, so I didn't get a chance to...
like Prince Harry. Nice one, Jacob. Mm. Yeah, why is that? For his own pleasure? Is it business or what?
I think it's just to monitor their fitness and body weight.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. That's what we all say.
Yeah. That's interesting. Vladimir Petkovic, manager of Lazio.
Yes.
Crikey. So, what? Zerati in the buff and all that? Right, I'm not going to ask that question, producer Ben, about which player we'd all most like to see naked. Interesting. That's it then, unless anyone else has got any other little hidden gems. No, that's it. Listeners, sorry. We'll be back on Monday to review all the weekend's action. Hopefully you'll join us then. Have a super weekend in the meantime, and many thanks for now.
Blue Square Bet has a soft spot for all you Football Weekly fans. That's why, for a limited period only, if you join bluesquare.com and bet £25, we'll give you another £25 bet for free. Just text Guardian to 64555, that's 64555, and get your Football Weekly fans offer now. Enough said. Just bet with bluesquare.com.